Since the show began almost 2 years ago, A Change of Tune has highlighted some of the best up-and-coming artists out of these West Virginia hills, with podcasty chats ranging from Bud Carroll to New God, Roswell Kid to Coyotes and Boxes, and beyond. But those interviews have been a bit infrequent. And since West Virginia Day is coming up, not to mention A Change of Tune's second birthday, we thought we'd do something special. 30 days, 30 brand new West Virginia music interviews that range from Morgantown alt rockers and Parkersburg singer-songwriters to West Virginia music venues and regional artist management and beyond, all of which contribute to the state's wild and wonderful music scene. And today we are chatting with Brad Goodall, aka Be Goods, aka keyboard player for up-and-coming Huntington band Ona. You can also add solo performer to that list of titles, as he's been releasing EPs and singles by himself over the last few years. We chatted with Brad about his solo releases, his Ona relationship, and what it means to have a mullet. So, do you want to introduce yourself and what you do normally for music and things?
My name is Brad Goodall, and I play keyboards. I'm a longtime keyboard player. I dabble on other instruments, but I never perform on them. Let's see. I joined Ona 9 months ago. I think it was something like that, 8 or 9 months ago, and was very pleased to have that offer. But I'm trying to walk the line between making my own stuff at home and trying to support a larger group of musicians and in a collaborative sense. It's been fun, but a challenge as well. I don't know, because what I do, I kind of make music that's like a little bit more, I don't want to say shallow. I'm not trying to, in comparison to Ona, I'm definitely having maybe a little bit more of a quirky fun with it, I think. I can feel myself kind of growing out of that too. I think I'm ready to, I don't know. I try to keep it honest. I'm never lying in the lyrics or anything like that, and it's not meant to be completely false or anything like that, but it's definitely more lighthearted, I would say.
I assume you're born and raised in Huntington, correct?
That's right.
Okay. So born and raised in Huntington. How did you get started in music?
I didn't start playing piano until I was like 16, and that was there was always one in my house, and it was kind of just like, I remember being real into, like, making movies and stuff and, like, making skate videos when I was, like, 12 or 13 years old. I think I tried to make short films or something, and, like, nothing ever got made because I always needed my friends' help, and they just never felt like doing it. So I think I kind of turned to music because it was something you could do by yourself eventually. You know, especially the piano was something you didn't need anybody's help to express yourself or, you know, learn a craft. Thinking back, that's kind of how I got into it. It was like, oh, I can just sit and play this thing in a room, and it kind of fulfills the same needs that making movies or skateboarding or whatever else I was into at the time. It kind of filled a gap, I think.
What kind of music did you listen to when you were younger? I have a few guesses, but I'll let you say it before I say mine.
Well, when I was, like, real young, it was definitely just whatever was on the radio, for sure. I really didn't develop a good taste, I don't think, until, like, college. But in high school, I don't know, I was, like, real into, like, John Mayer and, like, whatever my dad was listening to. Like, I have, like, a lot of, like, yacht rock upbringing. It was a lot of, like, Doobie Brothers and, like, Chesapeake Bay rock. I don't know, Bruce Hornsby, Don Henley, Michael McDonald. Like, a lot of that, like, old man, blue-eyed soul kind of music was definitely what I heard growing up. And I think it's still, whether or not I like it is my background.
Yeah, I would have said, you know, like Kenny Loggins, you know. I also would have included a little bit more synth kind of music, you know, maybe more like the Hall & Oates or...
Oh, yeah, that stuff too, for sure. Yeah, it was just a lot of Elton John too, a lot of Elton and a lot of Billy Joel, especially like in high school. I learned to play piano from these two books, which I still have, and they're still sitting on my piano. I have the Billy Joel anthology and the Elton John anthology. And I would literally go through those and it would say F. It would say, okay, Tiny Dancer starts in C, and it would show you the notes. Or I would just Google like what the position was in the piano. And like, that's literally how I learned to play piano, from like 5 or 6 songbooks that I bought around high school age.
Oh, that's so sweet. So you didn't have your mom or dad or family member suggest that you get into, making music. You just did it for yourself?
Well, everybody played. My mom sang in church, and my dad, played piano at home, strictly just for fun. And he used to perform, I guess, a long time ago. But it was just always around. My older brother plays guitar, and it was just something people did. You would eat dinner, and then somebody would sit down and just play, or go to the room and play, or listen to music. It was just around. There was never any pressure on me to become a musician. It was just always around, and I got decent at it, I guess.
I would say so. I'd say you got decent. I mean, between you making music now on the side and you now performing with Ona, I'd say you're okay. A little bit more than that.
I'm doing good. Yeah. People come out. I think people enjoy it. And that's kind of the biggest hurdle I was trying to get to is to perform. I didn't really start performing really until I was out of high school. So, yeah, I've come a long way from there, I guess. But there's still a long way to go, I think.
Now, did you, after high school, what did you do? Did you do college? Did you move out of state?
I kind of went in and out of college for a year and I went to Marshall for a semester and undeclared and was yeah, this is no way. And I kind of just started telling myself there's no way I could go to real college. No, I couldn't just get an engineering degree or a math degree or a business degree or a sociology degree. There's just no way I could have done that. And I still didn't even get my music degree. I went to Marshall for 2.5 years, and I got a lot of experiences under my belt from there. I had a really good piano teacher, Dr. Sean Parsons. I was studying jazz, and I remember loving that, and I was obsessed with practicing, and I was probably kind of annoying because really trying to push it hard. I was man, we all need to become the best ever. We need to all be virtuosos right now. I was super impatient with getting better. And I think it drove me. So I practiced a lot. And then I would listen to so much jazz, but I would also listen to MGMT. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I was listening to what was happening at the moment, but also I was listening to, I don't know, Coltrane or Miles Davis or my big piano guy. I loved Thelonious Monk and stuff like that. But I would also listen to real current, college radio playlists and party music and stuff like that. So I learned to play the instrument from the jazz stuff, but then I guess I developed a taste from hanging out with my friends, and they would show me stuff, and I would just steal whatever they thought was cool, and it would be, and I thought it was cool.
When you were getting into piano, did you know about Bob Thompson from the area and him playing?
I had heard about him. I had heard about him for sure. I think I saw him. I went to a festival concert with Tommy Emmanuel was on. It was a long time ago. This was in high school. And I knew he was a beast. I mean, he was definitely regarded. Everybody talked about him. And once I got to college, people mentioned him a lot too. But I haven't seen him perform as much as I would like to. That's for sure. I'd like to see him more often.
Yeah, when it comes to jazz piano, he is the man. I mean, he's the man in any other regard too, but jazz piano is just crazy.
I have his album. I think it's a lot of live recordings from Mountain Stage.
Yeah.
And I listened to it all the way through. I mean, it's incredible, really.
It sounded like you had a mix of popular music and kind of oldies music. Was that kind of weird growing up with those influences? Did people kind of consider you odd because of that?
Well, they wouldn't consider me odd because I probably wouldn't talk about it to them. You know what I mean? I had a lot of hidden stuff that I was into that I didn't show everybody. It was sort of a secret identity as far as, I don't know, liking dad-ish kind of music. But I wouldn't go to a party and be check out this Doobie Brothers. I wouldn't do that.
Why? You should have.
I should have now, but you got to grow up before you can admit your tastes, kind of.
I was the same way. Yeah. I guess I didn't really talk about, because I grew up with my parents playing the Doobie Brothers and just all this kind of classic 60s, 70s, 80s music in the car. And I don't think I ever really talked about it with my friends, but I don't know why I didn't. I mean, granted, my friends like Britney Spears, but that's you can like Britney Spears and like the Doobie Brothers.
I don't know. I was too embarrassed at the time to be at a party, everybody standing around the kitchen counter, and I turn on Phil Collins or something like that. And that wasn't all what I was listening to, but it was just, that was definitely a hidden thing I had where I was maybe I shouldn't talk about or just play all this stuff. Like, it, you get older, and it's more comfortable to just be like, check out this cheesy stuff. Like, these grooves are amazing. But it took me a long time to get to that point.
Did you ever join a band after high school, or were you ever a part of a band before you joined Ona?
I have never been a part of a band before this band.
Wow.
That is weird to think about. It's also kind of like revealing to my personality, maybe. Like, I don't know, like, I'm not scared of collaboration at all. That was the great thing about jazz. I went to school with Rodney Elkins and Craig Berletic, basically the food stamps. Like, we could just show up and sit down in a room with nothing in front of us and just make music for, like, a half hour just out of nothing, like thin air. So I'm not scared to collaborate. I love to jam with people, but it was definitely, I never looked for it too hard or never meshed with enough people to be, like, playing keyboards in, like, a bunch of different bands, you know what I mean? I kind of wish I would have done that. I kind of missed, there was a couple of years of my life where I was just playing coffee shops, especially when I lived in New York. All I did was play, like, against the wall in a cafe for, like, 2 years, and I probably should have been in bands. I think I would have learned more from that, but who knows?
How did you get up to New York? Beyond, like, I mean, actually traveling up to New York. Like, how did you end up being in New York?
Well, when I was in college, I got kind of, like, obsessed with, like, the history of it a little bit, especially because, like, all the jazz stuff kind of introduced me to it because everybody met up there, 52nd Street and all that. And I was like, this is neat, like, a little piece of history. So I guess I got into it from there. And then I developed, like, my own curiosity towards it and, like, took a couple of trips, like, by myself and just, like, walked around with a backpack for a week. And then I guess I came home. I was playing piano at Huntington Prime, like, this penthouse restaurant, which was a pretty nice gig, actually, and kind of just middling around town, like, playing in restaurants. And I guess I needed some new experiences. So I sold my car and moved up there. I didn't know anybody either, which was kind of crazy. Most people don't do that. So I had one connection I made, like, from a Craigslist ad.
That's not sketch.
Like, no, it wasn't sketch. He was actually a nice guy, but and he, like, helped me a lot. And, like, I, like, rented a room from him, basically, until I got on my feet. But that was all I had, really.
And you were up there for how many months or how many years?
I was up there from September 1st to September 1st for 2 years. Like, 2014, 15, and I left. No, that doesn't sound right. It was definitely 2 full years, but when I say it out loud, it doesn't sound like 2 full years.
It went by so quickly, I guess.
Yeah, September. Yeah, so I left after 2 years, like, on the dot.
Huh. So what did you learn from those from playing around New York? What music experiences did you come back with?
I went from being, like, super shy and, like kind of hunched over the piano, like, oh, here's my little 2-minute song, to, like, by the end of it, I was, like, I learned to definitely learn to, like, engage an audience and also, like, sing into the microphone, like, really simple stuff, like, really simple performance stuff, like, introduce yourself, say your name, like, basic performance stuff, how to work a microphone as far as, like, volume, making eye contact while you're on stage, like, real simple stuff like that, just from playing basically 2 open mics that I went to religiously. And I got to watch people who were really good, like this girl, Amy Vachel, who just, like, got really far on The Voice, which I don't really care for that show. It's fine, but she's really talented. And I got to watch people like her who were, like, definitely ahead of me perform and how they, like, worked a room. And also their songs. Like, I just listened to a lot of different types of songwriters and kind of just stole from them whatever I could. But I could have been in Brooklyn, like, playing in indie bands and just been, like, loud as hell and just playing all the time in DIY venues. And I don't know. I learned a lot from playing open mics because you could not hide. You couldn't hide behind, like, a bunch of pedals or anything like that. I had to, like, learn the basics of, like, song craftsmanship, which was good for me, I think.
When you were playing up in New York, was it mostly new material? Was it original material? Was it covers of, like...
Some covers. I still play covers sometimes when I have to fill the time. I don't like to play covers, but I will. People always love it. I was playing original material. I hadn't written a song until I lived up there, and I started writing, like, I don't know, like, the first couple of tunes I wrote sounded like Randy Newman solo stuff. And then after a while, it started to become more and more myself, but I'd never written a song until, I don't know, 3 years ago.
Well, you say you didn't really like playing covers. Why is that?
I just don't see the music I like, and when I go on YouTube and watch my favorite artists, they're not usually playing covers. I mean, you go to a concert, you want to hear them play their songs that they were lucky enough to write these great songs. So you're better off putting your energy towards writing than learning covers, definitely. If you're just starting out and you're trying to learn how to perform, sure, play some covers. No big deal. That's how I started. I was always just playing. I used to play a Wilco cover. I used to play a Dawes cover. I used to play a couple other things, but I've never played them anymore because you should really be focused on writing. It's definitely more important than learning covers, but there's plenty to be learned from that as well.
Yeah, that's good advice. And I was talking to someone the other day who's part of this interview series, Andrew Atkins, who's down in Fayetteville. And, you know, he's toured around so much with a band called The Wild Rumpus over the years. And he was saying how just cover bands, they don't really do that much good for the scene, because if a band is down the street playing covers of REO Speedwagon or Motley Crue or Bowie, and then you have a band with original material that people don't know that much, odds are the people in that town are going to go to the one that they do know, even though it is a cover band instead of the touring original material band.
Right. And that's absolutely true. But also, it's just like, I feel like cover bands, it's kind of cheap, and not in like not in an insulting way at all, but it's just kind of cheap because there's not really any risk there. I mean, the songs are road tested. I mean, if you're playing a song that sold 3 million copies, even if you kind of butcher it, you're still like, you'll get a response from the crowd after they hear the first lyric or chord change or whatever. It's just a little easy, and not in an insulting way, because I play covers. Like, there's no problem about it with it. It's just, I think in the end, people want to hear what your thoughts are and your musical ideas are, and that's always what will survive longer than a cover act.
Well, let's talk about you and Ona. So after getting back from New York, it sounds like you came back to Huntington, and then pretty much you started jamming with the band Ona down there, right?
They called me, and they kind of were hinting at offering that to me. And then I booked this like 2 week little tour with a couple of my friends, and we were playing around. And I was in North Carolina when they called me, and I was like, it's the only tour I've ever been on, by the way. It was like all like little rooms. That was actually really fun. I wish I could do that again more. And I had 1 month to go up there and like get my stuff and come back. And within a couple of, we were rehearsing and hanging out really quickly, like as soon as I got back. But I didn't perform with them until Marshall's Fest. I think it's just called Fest. That was like my first real experience with them. And we had a lot of time. I probably rehearsed with them for a month before I was performing with them.
And how did you, I mean, did you know the guys from the band originally? How did they connect with you to join the force of Ona?
I grew up with almost all of them, except Max. I grew up with Zach Owens. We were like, went to the same public schools and stuff, and we were like skateboarding together and hanging out or whatever. And he actually body slammed me one time, and he still brings it up. We were like in fifth grade, and I guess I was being a punk, or he was being a punk, one or the other. And he like picked me up and like threw me down on the playground in like fifth grade. So one of these days, when he's least expecting it, I'm going to body slam him. And that's going to be like the longest payoff of my life. But I grew up with him, and I knew Jeter from skateboarding as well. Like just rolling around together with like Blair Burns and like the local skate scene. So we had met together from that. And I knew Brad Jenkins, like, from high school. Like, we met sometime during high school. And I knew he was doing, like, open mics and performing and stuff. And everybody was kind of already talking about him then, like, yeah, he's pretty good, like, whatever. And when I got to college, I had this really terrible party house, but it was actually a lot of fun. And he would sometimes come over and, like, play guitar on the porch, and we would talk about music. And we were, like, 18, and he was just starting to make, like, home recordings and stuff. And he would, you know, come over and show me his new stuff or whatever it was. I wasn't writing music at that time. I was, like, just playing drums and goofing off. But he was definitely more serious about it than I was at that point.
No.
But, yeah, I have a history. I didn't know Max until I got home. I joined.
That's so sweet. And, you, like, so friends, I mean, a little bit more than acquaintances. You guys kind of hung out. And then just keeping up with each other over the years allowed you to reconnect with them to be a part of the band.
Yeah, for sure. I wouldn't have came home and joined had I not known these guys as well as I did. I think if it was just like a cool offer from a cool band, I'd have been like, yeah, that's something to think about. But the fact that it was Owens, and I've been kind of watching Owens over the years because I knew he went to Berkeley, and when he came back, we hung out and jammed, and I remember like thinking like, wow, like he went and got like really good. And that kind of like sparked a fire in me to maybe go to music school. But had it not been like old friends, I don't think I would have joined.
When you first joined the band, I mean, you said before this is the first band you'd ever joined. Was it kind of weird? I mean, you were friends with the guys, but it must have been kind of interesting the first couple weeks trying to figure out, okay, I'm in a band now. How should I act?
Yeah, there was like tons of inside jokes that I didn't know what they were talking about. Like, that was a big thing I noticed. I was like, yeah, this is like a brotherhood, and like I'm like this new guy, like, standing on the wall. I did notice that right when I got back. Bands that hang out together like all the time, and we do hang out together all the time, there's definitely like a language that is like a pig Latin that gets developed within the band, and you kind of have to, you either know it or you don't. And it took me a long time to like catch on to a lot of the stuff they were talking about and how they interacted. But musically, you know, they let me do my thing. I mean, nobody was telling me how to play, and then they still don't tell me how to play. They might suggest something, but I have learned how to like scale it back. Like when you play jazz, it's definitely like you're filling every single gap of like everything all the time. And when you're playing in like I would call Ona just indie rock, it's all about just honoring the song, really. I guess that's the best way to put it, like honoring the song, but also giving it enough, especially in a live performance, to where you are giving the ear enough to grab a hold of, and swelling and dynamics and stuff like that. I'm still learning how to play the organ, by the way.
You'll get there one day, right?
Yeah.
How long does it usually take to learn an organ?
I don't know. What I mean is, like, it's the same instrument. It looks the same, but, like, organ's all about, like, changing your tones, and, like, it's all about volume and, like, the Leslie. I'm getting better at it, but I would like to become a really good organ player one of these days.
Now, I forgot to ask you when we were talking about it, talking about the record of American Fiction and the release of it. Did you play any roles in helping get that record up and running? Like, did you contribute to it in any way?
In very, very small ways. All the organ on that record and just about all the keyboard parts in general are played by PJ Woodard, and he did a great job playing the organ on that. I kind of, I'm only on three tracks. World at War, there's like a Fender Rhodes jab happening, and American Fiction, there's like acoustic piano that's happening throughout the verses and choruses. But most of that is all PJ. I just kind of jumped in on the end and threw on what I could, but they were all the songs were just about done. Everything was just about done by the time I got back. They were really kind of just putting finishing touches on it by the time I got home.
And what about the new record, which I assume you all are working towards? Are you contributing to that as well?
Yeah, this one feels, I think the first album, from what I've gathered, was like a lot of Owens and Brad just kind of coming together and sharing the writing experience probably pretty equally. I know some songs Owens wrote entirely himself, but then Brad would come up with another piece or a bridge or an outro, something like that. From what I'm from like the practice sessions we're having now, it definitely feels like it's more of like a team effort. But somebody usually comes up with some kind of idea, but then Brad's always quick to be able to write the lyrics. I mean, I'm not writing lyrics for this band, but I mean, Max will throw a verse out or like a lyrical idea, and it'll catch. Like, it'll be like, yeah, let's just use that. Like, that sounds great. That fits. It's definitely a team effort, which I like. I'm able to contribute. Like, I can come up with an idea or a chord change or like some kind of somebody we want to steal from. Like, sometimes it's as simple as that. It's like, yeah, we need to write like a Leon Russell song. Can we try this? Like, let's just try to copy them until it becomes ourselves.
Well, how's the writing process for that compared to the writing process for your own releases? Like, you just released a new single, Jewel City.
Right. Well, I can't get away with certain things with them. Like I like a lot of like rhythmic kind of piano and keyboard sounds that would just never fly with this band. So that's really the only difference. And also the fact that I had to write the lyrics, which I really don't consider myself a lyricist. I'm definitely a keyboard player, but I don't consider myself a lyricist. But I like to write, and you got to do it if you want to, you know, write pop songs or whatever you consider a pop song. But with them, I kind of lean on sort of a different muscle that I have, where I'm trying to write piano riffs that are like a little bit more from a different, how could you say, not genre, I guess genre. Like, I'm not going to bring the Hall & Oates smooth stuff to them. Like, they don't care for that stuff. So I have to like lean on like more, you know, I want to say authentic piano styles for sure. Authentic meaning, you know, maybe like a little bit more American rock, a little bit more songwritery, and less like groove intensive kind of stuff.
So after, I guess, a year of getting Ona's material up and running, and of course the release of American Fiction, then you all were invited to be a part of Mountain Stage and here in Charleston.
That was definitely the most like show business serious thing I've ever done, for sure.
But it was also filled with family. I mean, a lot of the people in the audience were friends and family.
That was definitely a home game, for sure. Which actually, I was super nervous, and like we were taking like our deep breaths side stage, like, okay, let's go and have fun and play, like, focus, you know, get in the zone. And then like we sat down and somebody heckled or like yelled out, said something funny, and I immediately, like, the nervousness kind of went away immediately, because I knew, I was like, yeah, this is like our crowd. This is, we'll have a good time. This won't be as scary as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, and you guys opened up for Rah Rah Riot, which is a big indie, like, they're kind of like a seminal indie rock band, indie pop rock band, and they noticed that too, that the crowd was really, the crowd was there for live performance radio and for Mountain Stage, but a good part of that audience was there for you all and Ona, and they were
sure.
Like, they knew it, off. They just knew it.
That made it so much sweeter, and like that made the experience so much more fun, because we kind of got to share that experience with everybody, which is awesome.
Now, you call Jewel City, that new single, a bittersweet jammy for my hometown.
Right.
Why is it bittersweet?
It's basically, like, I'm not happy about every aspect of being here. Like, I love, like, the career is great. Like, I love playing, and being able to perform all the time is priority number one. Being able to write, record, and perform is priority number one. But, like, I'm not a huge fan of Huntington, or I wasn't when I left, for sure. That's the reason I tried to leave and wanted to gain some new experiences. But Huntington has like improved a lot since I've been gone, and like the scene is really strong here for, like, you know, like a small regional city. So it's basically just a transitional song about like weighing the pros and cons, kind of. The lyrics are pretty pros and cons of, it's like, I'm not super happy to be back, but like, it's comfortable. The longer I'm here, I'm happy about it. I'm not pouting all day. It's just weighing the pros and cons of like moving back to your hometown after living somewhere else.
Yeah, especially after living in New York for 2 years. That's
sure.
A huge difference. That's almost like a culture shock, returning back to something that's crazy.
Yeah.
What are some of the pros and cons that you're thinking of
Well, a big difference is, like, I sold my car to move up there, and up there you just planes, trains, and automobiles, and you can just hop on anything for, like, $2 and get anywhere you need to be, especially using the metro system. So I don't have a car now, so I'm, like, stuck at home or at my – I have to just – I take the bus sometimes in Huntington, which is, like, unheard of down here. Like, mass transit down here is, like – taking the bus in Huntington is, like, what? Like, you did that? But I like it because it's pretty green and it's easy. But I don't do it all the time. That's a big thing. Is like I can't get around, and like I don't know. When I moved up there, I kind of had this envision of like, yeah, I'll be up here for a long time. Like I'm going to ride this wave until I can. But I just could not turn down the job of playing keyboards with these guys because it was like I said, it was like the offer to play music with my old friends who wrote all these great songs. Like, why wouldn't I want to hop on that? It's great. But another con, I guess, would be there's definitely a little bit less opportunity for, like, basic work, I guess. Down here, there's, like, just less jobs, day jobs. Musically, there's kind of plenty of jobs. Like, I don't know, I have gigs, and Black Sheep's been really great, the residency, hanging out down there. But it's just smaller, and opportunities are smaller. But it's not breaking my heart or anything. That's just something I've noticed for sure. But it definitely is a lot cheaper here.
Are you a full-time musician, or do you have a job on the side?
I do odd jobs, and I work for my dad whenever I can, which is not that often anymore. I was working for him, like, part-time for a few months right when I got back. But he hasn't really needed me down there, so I'm just kind of coasting, really, off, like, some gig money. And just I live at home, so I don't really have very many expenses.
Yeah, and the living's easier. I mean, you don't have to worry about going to the laundromat. You don't have to worry about, you know, the fridge not being stocked up. That's done for you.
That's true, but also that's also kind of a con because it's like, you know, I'm living at home with my dad again, and there's like all that entails when I was living 9 hours away with like all this crazy freedom. So that's what I mean. There's pros and cons, but I'm just trying to, as long as the music's good, I could live anywhere, I think. I really think I could. If I had a great, if, like, I could play music and it's going well and, like, there's people to come out, like, I think I could live just about anywhere.
Well, it does seem like the music here is getting better. I mean, you mentioned it yourself,
Definitely,
but it's coming back here 2 years after being in New York. Monumental difference. For me, when I was growing up in Charleston, I had no eyes on what was happening locally. And granted, now my job involves me keeping an eye on local music, but it just seems like it's blossomed. And that's really reassuring. And at least that way of West Virginia progressing to another state.
Right. No, I completely agree. But there's also a lot of cons to like living in New York. Like Ona is able to hop in a van and afford a van and afford like this great rehearsal space because we live here. If you live in Boston or Nashville or New York or L.A. or, like, Seattle, I don't think we would be able to afford, like, the rehearsal space we have and, like, being able to have a van and, like, have no worries about parking it or, like, paying the taxes on it. Like, all the New York bands that I know have, like, a real tough time touring because it's, like, how do you afford a vehicle and, like, keeping it and, like, the insurance and all that stuff? So my opinion has changed as far as like living, let's say, down south or out west and like maybe a smaller city, because growing your band and like growing an audience is like almost all based on like how you do on the internet and touring. That's basically all it is. Like if you can get to them on the internet and they can find your music and then they can come check you out, that's basically all you have to do. But if you can't tour because you live in like some super expensive city, then like you're just like an internet band and you just perform in your town. And I think that's been helping the success of Ona and other bands around here, because like you can just like drive to Cincinnati or you can drive to Louisville, you can drive to Lexington in like a couple hours and play to basically a whole new market.
It seems like you all have really set up a kind of audience in some of those cities you just mentioned, like Cincinnati. I feel like you've been to a lot in the last year, Lexington, though it's nice to see you all setting up shop in different states and then also helping bring some of those bands over to West Virginia. So you have a kind of a little collaboration of sorts in the
region. Right. I think it's kind of pivotal as far as getting into another city. Like, I've learned all this stuff since I've been back, which has been another pro as far as, like, being back home. Like, I'm learning, like, music business stuff that I kind of didn't know about before because I was just a dork making keyboard songs and putting them on the internet. So, like, that's great, too. But I have an Ian around, and he's, like, this dude, like, lives and breathes, like, booking bands. I mean, he also just lives and breathes music, and he's a performer himself. But, like, he's hustling super hard, and he's, like, had all these great ideas to, like, grow the band and get us out there as far as getting in front of new people and pushing us into new cities and stuff. Like, he's done such a great job. And as far as booking, like, I had no idea how to really book stuff except for the stuff I had booked. Like, trading shows, I didn't know what trading shows was until I got here. And it's like, okay, you can drive to Cincinnati, and Angela Pearlie will close the show, and she'll bring 150 people. And then she can come here to V Club when we have people. And there you go. It's a nice little business relationship, and just it's a nice way to keep it going and to get into new cities.
Well, yeah, and it's great. I mean, that it's importing music, but it's also exporting music, and it's helping both
Absolutely.
Scenes out. And then that also opens you up to, you know, there's a lot of music festivals that happen here in West Virginia. But if you go to a bigger city like Cincinnati or Louisville, that's opening you up to then to like the bigger festivals going on in those states. And
right.
It's just a lot of positives there.
Right. Yeah, since I've been back, I've noticed like a little bit better turnouts and like responses from crowds and stuff. And it has a lot to do with like you guys and NPR and like the Sirius Radio thing. And I think it's helped a lot. And I can just see, I can feel it growing. And like, that's a huge pro is like being able to go out and play these shows. And like, you can kind of tell like you're making you're earning a couple of new fans all the time. And like, that's really exciting to see people like respond to what we're doing. And like, they just genuinely like it. And they're not your parents or whatever. Or you're like old friends. They're just like strangers and they're into it. Like, that's super exciting.
What's one thing that you hope happens in the West Virginia music scene in the next year?
Well, I think there's definitely genres that around here that are working better than like other genres. Like, I like synthesizers and like really, I like keyboard.
Me too.
I don't see very many keyboard bands. So I'm trying to fill that gap, but like, I don't have a band yet, but like, I would love to be the, you know, the flagship keyboard artist.
What's next for you? What are you up to, with your music?
Well, I bought this DX7. I bought a Yamaha DX7 in like Connecticut while I was still up there for like $200. I got this great deal on this DX7.
Wow.
DX7 is like definitely the quintessential like cheesy 80s keyboard. But, I want like, I don't want it to just be that. Like, I'd like to use some of these sounds, but still give them some kind of human touch to them. And I haven't gotten there yet. Like, I think I have to start recording more like live instrumentation and like less computer stuff. And I think that's going to give it the human quality I need. I love these mechanical instruments and these synthesizers, but I'm still trying to achieve, put some more human ingredients in them to where it feels like a little bit more alive. That's my challenge for sure.
And what about with Ona and, you know, your work with the band?
With them, we're definitely having fun this summer and trying to try to work as hard as we can just with the shows and making each show get a little bit tighter and a little bit more fun. And they really are. I could tell a difference since I've been here how much fun the shows are getting, and we're getting tighter, and that's super fulfilling. But with their recording, with their process, I think their writing process is changing a little bit with how having another person who throwing ideas into the hat, and Jeter does too. Everybody's throwing ideas, but this one definitely feels like a team effort and everybody's opinions are heard. I think we're going to make a really good second record, and I think it'll be different enough to be like, oh, okay, there's growth happening here, but I think the common denominator is definitely going to be Zach's guitar playing and Brad's voice. Like, it'll still feel like the album or the first album or the first incarnations of the band. But there's definitely new things happening in there, but that I'm really excited about.
And that new Ona record will be what, next year, early next year?
It'll be a little while from now, but not too long. I would say next year sometime.
Okay.
I don't know. I think we don't want to wait too long, that's for sure. I would say next year, 2017 spring maybe.
So that's on the record that it's sometime next year?
Yeah, 2017. And we are working hard, and I'm super excited to keep writing. We're just going to keep writing and writing and writing and just pick all the gems and try to write a really cohesive and new album, I guess.
Brad, if there's one thing about you that people don't know about you that's funny or interesting, whatever, what is that one thing that you want people to walk away with?
Something they don't know about me.
Mm-hmm. You know, the one thing we didn't bring up in this interview was your hair.
Oh, yeah. You want to talk about my hair?
Yeah, let's talk about your hair. Okay, go ahead. You want to describe your hair to the audience?
Yeah, my hair is it's very long. It's very shiny. It gets oily after 2 hours of not being in the shower. It gets greasy quickly, and I think that's part of its allure, really, because it gets kind of slick and kind of stringy after a while. And I had Mo, Jeter's girlfriend, give me a true mullet, and it was really fun to have that. It looks good with the members-only jacket and stuff, but I think I'm ready to get a traditional haircut. I've kind of had really long hair for a really long time, and it's just always in my face, and it's like you kind of have to, like, take care of it, and I'm tired of doing hair maintenance. That's the reason I usually just throw a cap on.
I mean, are you okay with people saying that you have a mullet?
Yeah, I don't care. We played in Louisville, and the drummer for the Sawdusters, who was on that bill, he had, like, a true mullet. I'm telling you, like, the sides were completely shaved down. Like, he had an intense mullet. I felt like the loser in that mullet contest. I lost a mullet contest to that guy for sure.
What kind of attitude should you have if you have a mullet?
Raw confidence.
Is that, do you think you have that raw confidence to rock a mullet?
I did when I had it, but it's grown out now, so now it's not a mullet anymore, so I've lost my confidence. The mullet really gave me the confidence I needed to really be my true self, and now that it's waned, you know, I'm feeling kind of, I'm smaller now because of it.
Maybe you should just shave off the entire hair. You know, just shave it off, make it into like a wig of sorts, and then keep it with you on tour. And then if you ever need confidence, then you put it on and you wear it.
That is a brilliant idea. I could get it wigged, and I could just have a buzz cut, feeling great all day long. No one will ever recognize me, not that anyone ever does. But then as soon as we go on stage, 5 minutes to showtime, boys. I'll just whip the mullet on, and boom, it's showtime. That can be my one thing people need to know about me. Is the mullet gave me all the confidence, and now that I don't have it, I have to get some kind of other daring haircut so I can feel confident again.
Brad Goodall's newest release is Jewel City. Catch him on tour if you can, usually by himself or even with his band, Ona. Hear more hashtag WB Music on A Change of Tune, airing Saturday nights at 10 on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. And for more West Virginia music chats, make sure to go to wvpublic.org/wvmusic. I'm Joni Deutsch. Thanks for listening.